Welcome to Christ the Center, your weekly conversation of Reformed theology. If my count is correct, we're on episode number 704. My name is Camden Busey. I'm in Grays Lake, Illinois. I'm really excited today. I usually am every week, but today we got a fun one lined up. I've been looking forward to this for some time. We have with me Mr. John Fickert, Reverend John Fickert, who serves as the General Secretary for the OPC's Committee on Ministerial Care. He's an old friend, becoming older every day. Welcome, John, to the program. It's great to see you.
Thanks, Camden. And just to be clear, I'm the Director of Ministerial Care.
I'm sorry. Yes, I was going to ask. I failed to do that. Yes, it's a different... I guess we can get into why that is, but that's an important distinction. Director of the Committee on Ministerial Care, correct?
Yeah, that's there right. Yep.
We joke. I got to spend about 8 to 9 months when I was a year-long intern in Wheaton, Illinois at Bethel OPC and loved my time there. Craig Troxell was serving as pastor, and so also was John. So I got to know, John and I got to know each other there and both living on the property, not in the basement or anything, but... I had an intern house, which is very thankful for, and John lived at the other house, and so we got to see each other a bit more than even outside of work hours. So, it's great to have you on the program, John, and I can't wait to talk about some of the work of the committee. So, how are things going? Now you're in Iowa, correct? And maybe you can give people a little bit of an update of your ecclesiastical context, because you're also serving in various capacities throughout the presbytery and even in local church as an advisor.
That's right. Yes. So with the current call I've taken, I'm not actually on the session of the OPC in Pella, but I serve as a guest there. Then I'm also a ministerial advisor to the Des Moines OP Church while they're looking for a pastor.
Mm-hmm.
So I serve on that session as well.
So people may not know, but the OPC Presbytery of the Midwest is soon to be, or maybe more aptly called, the Presbytery of the Louisiana Purchase, because we are enormous, largely cover that territory. We are soon, perhaps, to divide, not over any bad reasons, but just the fact that we're large and going to be petitioning the General Assembly to split and send Minnesota and Wisconsin and the UP of Michigan off on its own. Very thankful for their work. I'm going to miss those brothers greatly. John and I will still be in the Presbytery of the Midwest, which will have the old name and be the new presbytery. So how this works, we don't know, but we're still going to get at it and continue our work. So there's a lot of interesting things going on. Just provide a brief update. Head on over to reformedforum.org for information about our all of our programs, but also new courses we have online and new publications. I am always desirous to let people know about what we're up to. And it's an exciting time here at Reformed Forum. We're very thankful for the support that we receive and the opportunity to do some exciting things. So if you'd like to learn and Reformed theology and perhaps use some of our resources for a Bible study in your church or just for personal study between Lord's days, there are a lot of different resources that can assist you and support your work and come alongside and support the work of your local church. So if you haven't checked us out, or maybe you got some officers or a pastor or something that isn't familiar with what we're doing, particularly at Reformed Academy, send them on over to reformedforum.org or have them contact us. We'd be happy to talk about ways that we can come alongside local churches and assist in that regard. In many ways, that's kind of what the Committee on Ministerial Care does, providing care, but also not only helping directly, but being a resource ministry of sorts, providing a lot of information and assistance to a unique set of people with unique needs. Certainly there's a lot of peculiarities to the vocation of pastor, of shepherd, of a flock, and sometimes ministers don't always have the right information. I know just doing taxes, I've probably received three different conflicting accounts, and maybe all three would put me in jail. So, like, if I followed them. And it could be a challenge just on very practical fronts to know how to deal with things like that, but also the unique stresses that come along with being a pastor of a church. And there's great need. So, John, I'd love for you to tell us a bit about the Committee on Ministerial Care. Perhaps you can provide some background into when and why it was formed, and the charge from the General Assembly, the mandate that we have in your work.
Yes, probably the place to begin is a major chunk of the committee that's really continuing past work in the OPC is that for years we had a committee on pensions. Mm-hmm. I believe it dates back to the 1960s, and it did a really good job of helping pastors with retirement needs. But I think over time, there was a real recognition that there was really just a lot more detail in terms of financial needs, and not only financial, but there's other kinds of needs that pastors have, that we should have a committee to try to support ministers more fully and more carefully. And so that's, as with most things, it started with a study committee, looking at the issue, what should we include if we're going to restart a committee? And then in 2017 is when our committee officially launched as a standing committee. At that time, the Committee on Pensions dissolved, and then it was reformed as this committee. And we continued with the retirement planning and retirement fund for ministers, but then we rolled in the diaconal care of ministers that was previously covered by the Committee on Diaconal Care. And we rolled in the pastoral compensation tool from Kimke, the Committee on Church Extensions. They had been overseeing that for church planners, but it was really meant only for church planners. And they wanted a compensation tool that could be really used by all ministers. And those are, I would call, three major chunks to what was put into the committee. But there's really a 12-part mandate. It's on our website. It's in the GA minutes. I don't know where else to say, but there's a number of different things that they would like our committee to be working on.
Yeah. I think the work of this committee is so essential, and it's exciting to me to know that our denomination is working at these things. And I know other denominations and other organizations will carry on certain similar activities, but this is also an area where I think among NAPARC, perhaps, that the OPC is really blazing somewhat of a trail. I don't want to give us too much credit that maybe we don't deserve, but from my perspective, which is very limited in scope, it seems as if we are offering some leadership. So my hope in this conversation is not only that we can provide a report on what's going on and some of the inner workings of the Orthodox Presbyterian Church, but to think more broadly about needs that ministers have and ministers' families, and think about ways in which we can provide for a group that is simultaneously sometimes very, you know, under the microscope and considered frequently, but then also from another perspective isn't considered and can tend to be forgotten by others. It's a very odd thing. It's hard to describe, and unless you've been a pastor or the child of one or the wife of one, it's a unique thing, and not everyone understands that. So to have a committee that's focused on these matters, I think, is just really, really, really useful. I served on the advisory committee once for the Committee on Pensions a long time ago at my first General Assembly. And that's important work too. But to consider now how the scope of this committee has, as it has been reformed, how it's expanded, especially in areas of counseling, I think is really handy. John, I was wondering, you did an enormous amount of counseling behind the scenes at Bethel. You're trained in counseling. Your wife also exceedingly trained in counseling and still carries on a lot of those functions professionally. Can you speak a bit about maybe some of your pastoral counseling experience and also how that might inform and assist some of the work here as now you serve as a director?
Yeah, so the counseling piece, my own background is that I do have a master's degree in counseling, and I'm licensed as a counselor, and I have done a lot of pastoral counseling. Part of the current call I have even is that I asked to do a half a day a week of counseling with local people that have needs, just to keep those counseling skills sharp. But the real goal for me now is just to really offer a listening ear to pastors as they come with various kinds of needs. Half the job is listening to the problem and then kind of assessing where things are. So often, a pastor may have an issue that there is a way for the local church or the presbytery to really step in, but sometimes you just need somebody to talk out the problem with and figure out the best way to address it. So I think one of the things I'd want to say is that both me personally and our committee, we are not looking to step on the toes of a local session as they watch over their pastor or the presbytery. We really view ourselves as a support role and providing resources to sessions and presbyteries.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. Yeah, sometimes people hear about committee this, committee that, and especially our dear brothers over in the United Reformed Churches in North America, because of the CRC history, they tend to
Yes.
get very afraid of top down and bureaucratic structures where they start to think of a committee for this, that, and the other, and that committee just grabs hold and, chokes everyone out. And that is not at all what the CMC is doing or even aspiring to. It's not its intent, but there can be often there's such usefulness in having a group of people focused on a particular type of thing, especially people with experience and what we might say in the counseling sphere, case wisdom, that you can offer insight and assistance, whereas if all of that expertise and experience is, diffused throughout an entire denomination and never brought together in one place, it can be much more of a challenge to deal with some of these issues. If you're struggling with certain things as a pastor and you're only looking at your local congregation, you'd be very fortunate to have another pastor there. But most people don't. They're the only one there. Everyone's been around pastors before and had them, but no one has been one and necessarily knows all those things. That's where the work of a presbytery is so significant, but even more so the work of a committee that's focused on a specialized set of tasks and information.
Yeah, I think the issue of specialization is probably the key or the benefit, and this is our Presbyterian form of government. If you have a group of specialists that say, hey, if there's a financial planning need or a retirement need or a counseling need, maybe for a local church, they're only going to run into that like once every couple of years for their pastor, or I don't know how often. But if like there's one place you can go and you can get really good support when you need it, that's the goal.
It is the goal. I don't know how many times I've heard at Presbytery or elsewhere from ruling elders, well, how am I supposed to do this? Well, this guy did it that way. And then that's the answer. Or I talked to it to an accountant and he said you're supposed to do this. And the other guy's like, I talked to my accountant and he said I'm supposed to do this. And having somewhere to go with documentation just on tax matters and financial matters is useful. But also having someone to speak with about some other matters is really significant as well. Let's talk about this mix with the presbytery. You mentioned earlier that the committee now is tasked with taking care of certain diaconal matters for ministers and ministers' families. How does the Committee on Ministerial Care interface with the diaconal committee and at the denominational level? But also, it's interesting to consider this at the presbytery level and whether it might be prudent for presbyteries to consider an analogous committee that would focus on ministerial care for its particular ministerial members.
So there's a lot of pieces to what you just mentioned.
Yeah.
So I'm going to walk through part of it
We got
and
an hour, John. We do or longer, whatever you need. It's all you. Let's go at
So
it.
the place I would begin is there's usually something that comes from a local church or a local session or the pastor themselves where they have a diaconal need. And if that's the case, obviously they're assessing at the local level, how are they going to help? But if they're asking, it's because there's probably something beyond the local resources of the church. At which point I'm putting that elder or pastor in contact with the Presbytery Diaconal Committee. And it's actually the Presbytery Diaconal Committee that makes the request to our denominational committee. So that presbytery committee reviews the situation. They have their own funds typically, so they may be able to fulfill the need. But quite frankly, there's some diaconal needs that are just large and they're beyond what a presbytery committee can handle as well. And so it's even, I think, the coolest in a sense when you've got a presbytery diaconal committee contributing to a diaconal need, a local church contributing to that same need, and then our committee at the denominational level can also support that need. We do that in partnership with the other denominational committee, Committee on Diaconal Ministries, CDM. But how that works is essentially they've handed to us saying, if it's a pastoral need, we would like your committee to handle it. But the arrangement we have with them is if there's anything that's tricky or difficult about the case, we essentially consult with them and say, look, based on your diaconal experiences, what are your thoughts on this case?
Good. So at a presbytery level, explain to me then what types of things might be best handled by such a committee. I'm not going to go around and be an advocate and say every presbytery should create its own committee on ministerial care. Maybe by the end of this conversation, I will. But some, but we've had this conversation before, even on the floor. And I think it's a good conversation because I think it's helpful to have maybe a use case or some examples or illustrations you might be able to provide to see what types of things maybe are being missed. Even if a presbytery has a committee on diaconal care, where can a committee on ministerial care assist and provide for better oversight and better care of its members?
I would say a presbytery diaconal committee, I mean, their focus is on mercy ministry, and that's really important. But what happens when there's not actually a mercy need? Who's watching out for a minister? Who's checking in with ministers? And the way I've put it before is I think that some ministers enter a call or enter a presbytery and they're really well connected. They have lots of friends. If they have a problem, they know who to go to, and that's great. But not every pastor is like that. I think there's a lot of pastors that they don't know as many people. And if they have a problem, they're not sure who they should talk to, or they don't feel comfortable talking to somebody because it's embarrassing for one reason or another.
Right.
And so to me, the presbytery committee, because it's the regional church and in the OPC, that's where ministers have their membership, highlights that even more. It's like, so that's really the body that should be providing support for whatever the minister might be facing. And just to expand on that, because you're asking for specific examples, to me, an ideal situation would be is if there was a presbytery committee on ministerial care, they'd be having intentional conversations maybe once a year with every minister, just asking, how are you doing? How's your family doing? Checking on some of those relational things. But also, you know, checking in on, you know, you accepted the call. Are you still being adequately cared for? Is this call meeting your needs? You know, sometimes financial things change even beyond what you can expect. You have a couple more kids and suddenly it's much harder to meet the bills. And I think a presbytery committee can at least have some conversations with the pastor and sort out like, okay, what can we do about this?
Yeah.
It's not always easy for a pastor to bring up to his local session, I can't meet my bills the way that I used to.
Yeah, precisely. Those are wonderful examples. I think it's helpful. I think there's a bunch to discuss here, and I like talking about these things, but, you know, you and I are Presbyterians at heart, not just because we grew up Presbyterian, but, out of personal conviction. There can be a disjunct though, between being a Presbyterian in terms of, you know, doing the things orderly and being part of Presbyterian government and embodying and living out more of a Presbyterian spirit. Now, I'm not going to say that I see this often, but one thing that can happen is you can check all the boxes. You can go to presbytery. Ministers are members of the presbytery for, I think, good historical reasons. We can dispute that with our continental brothers who might disagree. But a minister is a member of the presbytery and his credentials are held there, and that's the place of his original jurisdiction. So think analogously for people who may not be familiar with the nuts and bolts of how this works. But a minister is a member of a regional church. And so it's not the same as a local church because we aren't worshiping there every Lord's Day. But it's the place where we're supposed to have our direct oversight and where we care for and provide, where we shepherd one another. You don't have one minister at the regional church who is tasked with a specific shepherding role over all of its members, but the body is supposed to be shepherding and caring for its members. We don't do that usually. Now, we do that by mutually subjecting ourselves to one another, ideally by meeting regularly with one another, calling people even outside of meetings and fellowshipping and asking how we're doing and caring for and shepherding one another. But as you mentioned, that doesn't always happen. Some people are just more not as outgoing. Other people are too busy, they think. There could be a host of reasons why people don't avail themselves of that. In the very sad sense, some people might be hiding something. You know, we never want to think of that, but it's true. People might be evading accountability in various ways. Having a committee that can oversee and shepherd people either with an annual visit or just friendly calls, having someone tasked with that is really useful. Some committees, some presbyteries might have a visitation committee, but usually we think of them visiting the congregation and not necessarily the minister directly. So there's great need for this. And really, in many ways, just having someone or a group of people focused on it is really the best step in a good direction.
Just to give one example to what you're saying, a lot of people that struggle with depression that are in public roles, that they're used to hiding their depression. They're not used to reaching out for help. But I'm amazed how if you reach out to somebody and ask, how are you doing? And checking on some of those basic things, they are open to talking about it, but they're not going to bring it up. They're not going to take the initiative.
Yes. And it's not going to be something that somebody writes in an annual report. Our presbytery doesn't even require it. If you're serving in bounds, as a pastor of a church or a church planner, missionary, something like that, you're not required even to write an annual report about what you've been up to. So there are ways to hide or not be noticed if you don't want to be. It's kind of a hole, or it's a little loophole that I'm not looking for bureaucratic answers here, but ideally we want everyone to be cared for by the chief shepherd and also by the under shepherds as best as possible. So a committee could be useful in that regard to embody, what every member ought to be doing for every other member. Depression, sometimes you can, when you've been around the block, and I haven't, but you can start to key in that somebody might give you a clue that they need help. It's a little cry for help that's veiled in various ways. But really all it takes is just asking someone and really meaning it, how are you doing? How can I pray for you? And then they'll be willing to share.
Exactly. Another comment would be, I think church visitation committees do some of this, but it's really hard because the church visitation committee is really there for the church report and to really focus on what a pastor might need. I think that can get washed out.
Or if they do it while the elders are sitting next to him.
Yeah. Are you being adequately compensated? Like, yes or no?
How are you getting along with your session? Great.
Exactly. If I could do one thing, like if I had the power, like the Pope or something, it would be that we would set up a program where every new minister that gets ordained, that there is an experienced minister that we say, you're going to check in on them periodically, find out how they're doing and pray for them, like every 3 months for 3 years.
Oh, that's a great idea. Yeah, basically have like an assigned mentor.
Exactly.
Yeah, that would be useful. I mean, it's so handy to have that in our internship program. It's not required, but I highly recommend, everyone coming out of seminary, go do a year-long internship for that reason. But also sometimes it's like you graduate out of that and it's like, well, you're out on your own. See you later. Having someone, especially maybe an elder statesman with a lot of experience and pastoral wisdom, to take someone under his wing and check in on him regularly is useful. He used to do that for me, even though I wasn't a church planter, but Reverend Jim Bosgraf was always good about that. And he was such a blessing to me and my family and really took us under his wing, and his wife Judy as well, you know, dearly. She's since passed away. We're very grieved over that, but thankful for their many, many years of service where he often provided that or stepped into that role willingly, even outside of his specific call to be a shepherd to many others, especially young ministers.
Yes.
Speaking of these specific examples is helpful to me, but when you go to the website, which you can over at opccmc.org, people will see many other things as well. And people that at least are in the OPC mailing circles will know about many webinars, for example, that have been hosted by the committee, interviews with authors and discussions, you know, about how-tos on financial planning and retirement, you know, matters. What are the types of resources you can find on the website? And perhaps we can dive into some of these matters and talk more specifically about how they can be quite beneficial to ministers and their families.
So some things you'll see on the website are obviously the webinar links, but then also we've got different, I would call them briefs on different kinds of insurance, like medical sharing, or we just had one posted recently on Medicare. So ministers that are nearing the age of 65 and need to understand more about Medicare, it's not going to give you everything, but if you want a two-page document to help you understand some things, that's what that's for. We got a paper on there as well on opting out of Social Security for young ministers within their 2 years of ministry.
Yeah.
And I should say that we're not taking a position in that paper, but we are laying out all the issues that a minister should consider for the very reason you were mentioning before about taxes, like, hey, this person says this and this person says that. And what we've found is that most guys that are making this decision just hear something anecdotally from a friend and they say like, oh, you should totally opt out, or oh, you should never opt out. And they give like one or two reasons and that's it. And we wanted a comprehensive place where, like, if you want to consider the issue carefully for whether you should be in or out of Social Security, here's a paper, read this, and then you can make an informed decision about it. That's a bit of a tangent, but that's one thing. And then we've got the pastoral compensation tool on there, which I would recommend for any pastor looking at a call, for any search committee looking at a call. And then also even for pastors, as that annual review comes up, I think it's really good for pastors in sessions just to use it to say, are we covering all the line items that we might be able to cover? And how are we doing, sort of as a benchmark for them. Different people have had different experiences with the tool. We welcome feedback on it. But the main thing that I would want to say about the compensation tool is that it's based on federal poverty guidelines. So we're not like trying to like create some huge balloon number for ministers, but we're trying to look honestly and say, all right, here's the federal poverty guidelines, which are based on family size. And then we multiply that times 1.5 to say that if we want a minister to be able to go on vacation with his family or anything beyond just the very basic poverty level, that's why we took it times 1.5. Yeah. And there's some other components to the tool, but that's where we came up with it. And we tried to be reasonable with the tool.
Yeah. Now that's so handy because there's so many things that can happen when somebody is candidating for a pastoral position. Then you have the discussion of, you know, a presentation of a call and that needs to get approved by the presbytery, and it has the financial package in there as well as discussion of how many weeks of vacation, this sort of thing. And I find at that moment, I mean, occasionally people will ask a question. In my 8 years almost of ministerial service, and then, you know, however many years I've been going to a presbytery, which was all through seminary, I've never once seen a call turned down, ever. Mm-hmm. And maybe some should have been, or at least sent back to a congregation. And if the congregation can't afford, then, you know, what would be adequate for a minister to be free of worldly care and focus on the work that he's called to do, then maybe think about some other innovative ways of meeting the need there, or changing the terms of the call so that the minister might be able to seek some remuneration through some additional work. But the tool is so useful, not because it is like a just a simple equation where you put in your zip code and, you know, how many years you've been working and how many kids you have, and then that's the assigned OPC dollar figure. This isn't very determinative like the military or something like that. However, it gives you a guideline and a frame of reference, I think. When would you recommend people to use this tool? I mean, at what part of the process might it be useful for a local church even to start thinking about these things? The day before the presbytery meeting?
That's a leading question if I ever heard one. No.
You should take my job. Yeah. You know all about this. What a bad question is. Anyway.
No, I didn't mean a bad question.
I know. Well, leading questions are not good from an interviewer perspective. Anyway.
I think a search committee and a pastor looking for a call are the two ideal places to be looking at it. I wrote an article that's on the website about how much should we pay our pastor. Yeah. And in that article, I talk about the fact that, you know, a lot of churches love to call pastors with, you know, young, large families, and yeah, that's great. But if it's a family of eight, it's just going to cost more to pay that pastor than it will someone who's in their 50s or 60s and is an empty nester. Mm-hmm. It just costs money to have a family and to raise children. And I think that needs to be taken into consideration in a call. And sometimes we tend to compensate for years of experience more than say, oh, this pastor, well, he only has 3 years of experience, but he has eight kids. and the kind of housing that he might be able to afford.
Right.
And so forth. It just needs to be taken into consideration, family size. And I don't think that's always completely considered, either by the pastoral candidate or the search committee.
Now, I realize also some people, other factors are involved, but sometimes I find that these other factors tend to be used, they can sometimes be used as an excuse, like, well, this guy's going to do Medishare or whatever, Samaritan's, you know, ministries to handle his healthcare. So we can drop down the expense there and save a few dollars. But you also have a whole lot of other effects and factors involved with like education. You know, what form of education might a pastor want to engage in his kids in? Homeschooling, private schooling, public schooling? Like sometimes you wonder whether these things are considered. And then you might have one congregation who feels very strongly about a particular mode of schooling, but yet a pastoral compensation doesn't fit with whatever they might want their pastor to do and what the pastor might prefer to do himself.
That's right. And so, you know, that's why, you know, every situation is a local situation. And so to me, a tool, the compensation tool online, it's more like a benchmark. It gets the conversation started. I don't think it's the final answer always. Mm-hmm. So then you need to look at a local situation and say, all right, what can we do here? Sometimes there can be creative mm-hmm. ways to work things. So mm-hmm. just imagine in a situation, probably the most expensive schooling option would be to send your children to a private Christian school, but perhaps the pastor could teach a Bible class there or something. Or, you know, there can be ways to lower the costs, and maybe there's a way for it all to work out so the family can meet their needs and be free of worldly care in a less conventional way.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's speak a bit about the webinars that the committee's been engaged in, and you've done some really wonderful things, even technologically. I know our friend Greg DeYoung has been at work to assist in live streaming and recording and having, you know, a really high quality final product to put out online. But speak about some of the subjects you've addressed and the types of things you're seeking to assist ministers in through the webinars.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited about the webinars as something we're offering to ministers and often to churches and sessions as well. And many of the webinars are also really good for pastors' wives as well. We're always thinking about both pastors and their wives for webinars. But to me, the overall picture is we think there's a lot of good content as a committee. Like there's so much good content for ministers to have. So we're not trying to flood the market with tons and tons of more content, which is why we're doing a quarterly webinar, once a quarter, try to pick a topic that we think could really serve ministers and their wives. And as an example of that, last fall, we interviewed Carl Truman regarding his book, The Rise and Triumph of the Modern Self.
Man, you
Well,
were ahead of the curve. I mean, he's all over like Ben Shapiro now. I mean, he's left orbit and is into the stratosphere.
that's right. And to me, it's like our goal with that webinar isn't to give him one more platform to like just review his book, even though we're going to go through the book. But the goal is like, okay, he's also a pastor. So, like, how should a pastor be thinking about this? How should a pastor think about the sexual revolution and preach through it? So we kind of focus that for our webinar with him, and get some fantastic answers and feedback just for thinking through pastoral issues. And that's really for us the tone of all the webinars is like, what is going to help a pastor? So earlier this year, we did one on the top 10 financial mistakes that ministers make. So, you can click somewhere on Google and find, different things that people do, but this is like, here's ones that ministers really need to watch out for. And then our most recent one is actually one of my favorite ones we've ever done with Dr. Joel Beakey on pastoral criticism. That is such a tough topic, and I was so happy he wrote that book on criticism because we all face it as pastors. And I just thought he had some really useful content for pastors to be thinking about.
Yeah, that's a really useful book. I appreciated that webinar as well. It was conducted by our good friend Bob Tarullo. Very thankful for him and his work on Reform Forum, doing a variety of things. But that book, I was down at the Greenville conference, the annual conference back in March, and I was looking at the book table, and that book was there, Pastors and Their Critics. And I turned to the guy next to me, who's a pastor, and I won't say who or what, but I looked at him and go, "You don't have any of those, do you?" And oh man, I got a good belly laugh out of him. I said, I think we both need this book. That's a good one to have. And it's a tough, sensitive subject. So having not only a recommendation on some books to read, but also your committee making the space to invite Dr. Beakey to speak about such a topic is useful. I don't know where else that would happen. I don't know who else would be doing something like that. It's really good.
Yeah, and so for us, it's like, okay, our audience is pastors. So every time we frame a new webinar, we're just thinking through what would a pastor want to know about this topic? How can we go into details? And Bob Tarullo, our good friend, he does a great job. Like he stays on point
Oh
and he
yeah, he's a
really all
pro.
the details well.
Oh yeah. Yeah, he's can't say enough about Bob. He's the best. One thing you reported on at our recent presbytery meeting is extremely exciting, but it's a new sabbatical program. Could you talk about that? This is something I think that many pastors are well overdue and could use, but frequently there's two issues I see, and there's probably many more. One, most local churches or sessions don't even think about it. They don't know that their pastor might be able to use such a thing. But second, even if they are aware, they might not be able to afford it, either the pastor or the congregation, whether that be time or pulpit supply or vacate, whatever. There's a whole host of reasons that would prevent ministers from going on a sabbatical where it might benefit them greatly. So, how did the sabbatical program come about? How is it even funded, and how does it work? In case some of our listeners might want to call you up here in a few minutes.
If they started calling me up for sabbaticals, we would be so happy.
I know. Well, this is, we're not giving away books here. We're not doing free call in whatever lottery or something like that. We're just saying, hear about this and then make the appropriate call. And talk to your pastor about it if you're not a pastor yourself.
I would say at this point, we are well funded to give pastors sabbaticals. And I think if we needed to, we could find more funding for it. So if you wanted a sabbatical, we can find the funding for it. Typically, what we're doing is we're giving out sabbatical grants. So a church would fill out an application for a grant. And We've set our ordinary maximum at $3,000, which will cover probably 3 to 6 months of pulpit supply, depending on the situation. And our goal with the grant is that it can cover anything, but typically it'll cover pulpit supply costs. So it lessens the cost of the church for the pastor to be gone, because during a sabbatical, the idea is the pastor's continuing to make his regular salary. It's not like it's a leave of absence where he's not making
That's
anything,
a really good
but it
point.
helps the church see through that situation. The other thing we're doing with sabbaticals is we are building a stated supply list so that if a church is like, hey, we want to do the sabbatical, but who's going to fill the pulpit?
Oh, I love this idea.
We can help with that too. So we're trying to remove barriers to that happening. Which the ones I can think of are stated supply and cost are the two primary ones. The additional issue, and this is why it's helpful to say this on your podcast and elsewhere, is just to kind of keep getting the word out, because I don't think enough churches and pastors are even thinking about sabbaticals, and it just kind of rolls on and nobody's thinking about it. And it's not like intentionally avoiding it, it's just not
No.
thinking about it.
All right, I'm going to play devil's advocate. I don't
All
like the
right.
devil at all, but I'm going to play his advocate for a minute.
All right.
This is a voice somebody might hear. Why does a pastor need a sabbatical? He gets 4 weeks of vacation. Why are we going to give him more vacation? What do you say in response to that? What is a sabbatical and what's its purpose and what's its value, John?
So I would say a few things. If you think about it, your average US employee has a full weekend, Saturday and Sunday, to themselves. So 2 days out of seven. But a pastor is really working on Sunday. In fact, that's their primary labors are on Sunday. And unfortunately, I would love it to be able to say that every pastor I know has really good time boundaries and always make sure they have one day off somewhere else in the week. But what happens is that's not actually happening.
Right.
So we've almost got pastors working 6.5 days a week. It gets really sloppy with actually having time to rest and time away. And I think there's a basic Sabbath principle where there should be one day in seven where a minister gets a rest.
Yeah.
I would even say historically, like if you look at what the internet, online, all the ways that pastors can be reached and connected to, they're almost always on for a church.
Yeah.
Like if there's a committee meeting at night, they have to go to it
Right.
because that's when other people can go. And so to me, a sabbatical is like a cumulative, we're going to take a larger chunk of time and say, this is time that the pastor can step away and refresh and renew, because it's very difficult to get that weekly time to really get the full break that they need.
Yeah. That's something people might not consider. I've heard comments sometimes where people in a congregation might think that the vacation allotment to a minister is more than they ever received, you know, and they've been working at their company for 25 years, and now the new pastor is getting more. The way that pastoral time and work functions is so foreign that it's hard for people to understand how it works. Like you don't get any holidays either. I mean, that's not, it's not just vacation, but think at a normal US employer, if you're not working straight hourly or as a contract employee, most companies you're getting a set amount of holidays. It might be 5 to 10 holidays in a given year. The minister might take off the 4th of July, but it doesn't do anything to his work. I mean, he still has to pastor people, shepherd people. He still has the same amount of sermons and Sunday schools and all the other things that are on his plate. He might be doing more because we might get invited to different outings. Or the Memorial Day is coming up, right? And people are, we just had it. And people are, often going to people's homes and stuff like that. That's fun. It can be refreshing for a lot of ministers, but especially introverts, it can be exhausting. And you're not off ever. Even when you're enjoying your time and spending your time with your flock, it's still work. It's good work. It's noble work. It's a blessed work. It's rewarding work, but it's still work. And sometimes having an express amount of time, a lengthier amount of time, to just step away and recharge and reflect and think in a different mode is almost incalculable how valuable that can be for a guy. And in the long run, allow your minister to work more faithfully and harder and more fruitfully on into the future, whereas many others might be burning out. We're seeing a lot of that too.
Yeah, I think that's actually one of our committee's arguments when we present sabbaticals to churches and sessions, is if you want a longer ministry for your pastor, you should be thinking sabbatical is a really good investment for how to do that. Or the risk of burnout just keeps increasing. Another comment I would make about the 4 weeks of vacation is, like, you know, this is a generalization, but for the most part, I find that pastors are like, they're going to travel to family somewhere right. else in the country. And that can be a special time with yeah. your parents or children or whatever, but it's really not off. It's not like you're just able to take a quiet walk in the woods or something like that.
For sure. For sure. Yeah. And of course, we're not bellyaching here. And then the pastoral right. ministry has great flexibility, you know. And if, you know, while I was serving as full-time pastor, if I needed to go run an errand, just go run an errand. You don't have to ask your boss to, you know, can right. I leave work for, you know, an hour to go to the dentist or something, or my wife needs me for something. It's flexible. I get it. But my point is not to weigh the you know, and say, oh, pastors have it so much more difficult. You know, it's that it's a different mode of life and existence, and having a committee such as the CMC focus on those types of things and think of ways to provide for ministers, ultimately providing for the church and all of its care. That is what is so necessary, and things that are often overlooked.
Yeah. I have a couple more comments about sabbaticals. One would be that I think when we think about, like, an academic sabbatical, like for a professor or something like that, you know, they're doing some sort of an academic form of study. And for a pastoral sabbatical, if it were an ideal, I would say that, you know, to have some sort of an arrangement where a pastor has a field of study.
Yeah.
You know, that makes sense. But I would also encourage people to read Brett McNeil's article in The Ordained Servant, mm-hmm. in which he talked about his sabbatical. And basically, he was just wiped out. And to have some break and to not try to be reading and studying, for him, that's what he needed to do to rest and recharge. And so I think we may be in a situation where there's a lot of pastors that maybe just need to disconnect more from pastoral work and reading.
Yes.
But each situation is its own situation. So we don't really know. So that's one comment. If you want to say something, it looked like you had something you wanted to say about
that. Well, I'm just saying this is part of the issue too, because sometimes people think in terms of deliverables, and especially people that are working in business and even in manufacturing, especially, you think of time in and product out, like how much time and effort does it take to produce this widget? And then just think of it in terms of a formula. And that thinking can even creep into pastoral ministry, where people are asking, well, how many sermons are you doing? Oh, how long does it take you to do a sermon? Well, I'll tell you what, sometimes I might preach a clunker that took me 40 hours.
Yeah, seriously.
And maybe and another one came to me in an hour. Who knows? It isn't, I learned very quickly that writing sermons, just one example, but writing sermons is nothing like manufacturing. It's nothing like time in, product out, and you can directly measure how much time and the quality of the product. It is nothing like that. It's mysterious. I don't mean to say it's like mystical and we can't think of it or just let things go the way they go. No, we want to manage our time correctly, but people will tend to think of the sabbatical too as, what am I getting out of this?
Right.
You know, where a congregation might think, well, we're going to let the pastor go for a week, a month, whatever, a few months. What's the product? Is it a book? Is it a sermon series? Sometimes it's just let your horse rest for a while and recover and gain strength.
And we're all wired differently, would be one way of putting it, right? So like, I think that there's a lot of guys in the OPC that they're just good, and I mean this in a nice way, plotters, where week after week after week, they can do the morning and evening sermon and the Sunday school and hospital visits, and that's just how they're wired, and they can do it, and that's fantastic, and praise the Lord for those gifts. But I think there's another group of ministers that, you know, they burn hotter, right? and it takes more out of them. It costs them more.
Right.
So like, it's really intense, but then when it's more intense and you can't just keep that weekly grind going, you're going to have to figure out a way to take a break if you want to maintain your ministry. And for sessions to recognize that and say, we want to help this man who served us so well continue his ministry. And so I think that's the question that even sessions should be asking is, what kind of minister do we have? Is it a plotter that he's going to be good? He can just go week after week and grind it out? Or do we have a minister that might get tired and need a different arrangement with more rest built in?
John, I love talking to you so much because you and I have some shared experiences. Number one, we're both fans of the University of Michigan. But we both have experience in business and even in engineering, and then both have served as pastors and continue to serve the church in various ways. So I'm so appreciative you say that. I'm wondering if you've had this similar experience. It's one thing to go and work in a corporation. I worked at Caterpillar. You get used to that, familiar with that. But then when I went to seminary, I started to get familiar and more accustomed to the academic pattern of life, which it's a ramp up and then a really hard push. And then you turn in all your papers, take all your tests, and then you back off for a couple weeks and just kind of recover yourself. And then you start up with another ramp up and you just do that process over and over. It was a real challenge for me to go back into a more weekly flow without that, because I found that I was applying that ramp up production kind of mindset in the writing of my sermons and all that sort of thing. But then you could never catch my breath, you know, writing two sermons and doing Sunday schools on top of shepherding ministry. A Monday or a Friday, I eventually changed my days off to Fridays instead of Mondays because I found I was doing work on Mondays anyway, that I just was never able to recover in the same way. And it took me a while to start to reorient and try to approach the labors in a way that was more sustainable. But it took a few years.
That's exactly right. And the thing is, I think everybody's wired a little bit differently.
Sure.
And I'm concerned that the way pastoral ministry is currently constructed, it only rewards the grinders that can just get up off the mat and do it the next week.
Right.
And so you look in a presbytery, who's left? You know, who's in their 60s and are still in ministry? Well, it's all the guys that figured out how to sustain it in their own way, or perhaps with the session's help.
Yeah.
But I don't think we're giving enough attention to guys in their 30s, 40s, and maybe 50s, where it's like, what do you need to keep your ministry going for another 20, 30 years?
Hmm. What was it like for you to switch gears and go from being an engineer to RTS and then eventually to pastoral ministry?
It's interesting. I think that my work compared to yours would be different, where because I was serving as an associate pastor at a church where there's a senior pastor.
Yeah, but you're preaching every week. You had an enormous pastoral load in a good way, and you met it well.
Yeah.
It's a little different, but I wouldn't say it was drastically different, was it?
When we would have an intern, so I would usually preach about 3 Sundays a month.
Okay.
That's probably how it ended up going.
Yeah.
And that for me was enough room that I actually never abandoned my project manager style. Because in that setting, what I thought the church needed was somebody to oversee some of these pastoral situations.
You're
or
right.
We need to set up this little program. I use that word in almost in quotes because I don't like programs for churches. But, you know, we need to set up this thing for or group or plan for whatever. And so in a sense, I probably never completely gave it up as much as I probably should have,
Well,
the
I don't
project
mean to
manager
disparage
style.
it. I'm not, I love, having an executive mindset or somebody doing those types of tasks, overseeing things, having a schedule, kind of a guidelines about when we want to finish things and making sure things don't fall off the table. That is needed. I think most churches need more of that. And I would say the executive function of the average pastor is like about as good as my 9-year-old. So, it's a challenge. We don't excel at those things usually. My point isn't that we shouldn't be doing that. It's just, again, like you were alluding to or just said earlier, that we each have to find out what is a sustainable mode of approach that we can continue week in and week out serving God's people without, dying on the path until it's time for the Lord to take us.
Yes.
There are a lot of aspects of pastoral ministry which can benefit from a organized methodological approach. But that's not to say that anything we do, counseling, sermon preparation or anything is quantifiable to the degree where you can just determine how much time and effort I put into it, and then I know exactly what's going to come out of that product it, or come out of that
Exactly.
process. It just doesn't work that way.
Exactly. And in a sense, we have a much higher standard, right?
Yeah.
Which is the truth.
Yeah.
Like
Right.
we're representing God's voice in worship. And to me, that was in a sense a burden on my heart that was much higher than, does my sermon have enough good illustrations or three effective points? But it's like,
Right.
am I speaking error? Is the truth of the gospel coming across? And that's the kind of burden that you just can't quantify that.
Right. And we sometimes we don't have the time to put in that we wish we did. And our former colleague, Craig Troxell, was always good to remind me, it's always the Lord that blesses. And the Lord,
Right.
Craig was convicted that the Lord understood, which of course he does, but that the Lord also would honor, faithful effort. And some weeks you have a few funerals, you have some really tough things going on in your own house, and you don't have as much time. Maybe you're even embarrassed how little or how few hours you spent on a given text, and you wish you had more, you had another day.
Yes.
Well, the Lord understands these things too. And not always, but frequently I found in my ministry that the Lord chooses to bless those sermons, those messages more than others where I come in, thinking, "Oh, I got this one nailed." And the Lord's like, "Well, let me remind you who's doing the real work here and how this operates. You're a messenger. You're not, the one changing hearts." And it's just good to be reminded of those things, I think.
I totally agree. I mean, if you listen to two ministers, maybe like us, talk long enough, you're like, why would anybody ever get into pastoral ministry? But what it comes down to, right, is that God's grace is always greater
Praise the Lord.
than our needs and our burden. And He has a passion for growing His church, and the Holy Spirit is at work. And praise the Lord to have a front row seat to seeing that work
Isn't
getting
that the
done.
best part of it all? Yeah, you get to that front row seat. How much do people, wish they could have a front row seat to their favorite band or, front row seat to the World Series or something, the college football national championship when your team's in it, whatever. It's like, no, we get to see lives being changed. We get to see firsthand, in many ways, that how the Holy Spirit is changing people to make them more like the resurrected Christ and preparing them for eternal glory. I mean, what more could you want? It's the best place to be. It's exceedingly challenging, but at the same time, it is exceedingly rewarding. And God always provides, like you said, His mercies are new every morning. Great is His
Yes.
faithfulness. The steadfast love of the Lord never ceases. It's not going to run out.
That's right. Now, if I could bounce off of this glorious point
Let's do it.
and go back to the grind just a little bit, my concern for pastors is often that if they have that week where it was a really heavy week and they had a funeral and something else going on, I don't think enough pastors think through how am I going to create a spot of rest and recovery for the next week
Oh, yeah.
or in the next week or two where I know that I'm just going to create a place where all I'm going to do is pray for 3 hours or take a walk, but in some way create a recovery period for myself. And everybody's different on that, but that's one of the things that I knew I had to do, because I would burn out if I just started right back up, you know, Monday morning, fire it back up, start getting ready for the next Sunday and following up on pastoral call, the pastoral call list and hospital visits. It's like, there's got to be some form of rest somewhere in there.
Yeah. I think that's really useful. There are a lot of different ways to approach that. Some more intricate than others, but I would just take my little moment on microphone just to encourage sessions and congregations to be liberal with their minister, getting pulpit supply for him, or at least, you know, allowing him maybe every quarter or something to do a pulpit exchange if you can. That can be a really a great benefit, and it doesn't cost the church a whole lot. Your minister won't be present at your congregation for one service, but you get to develop relationships with another nearby minister if there is one nearby. And if they're both doing it, they're both benefiting. Both congregations benefit, and it doesn't actually hit the budget at all if you're just doing a swap. So little things like that can go a long way, have a multiplicative kind of effect on the life of the minister. It could be handy.
And just to pitch this to you too, mm-hmm. I think when a session could provide a study leave, where a pastor knows that this time is coming, where I'm going to be able to plan out, 6 months of sermons or study a new book and review all the commentaries on it. When a study leave is in place, that can be huge too. And to me, that's also the building block to a sabbatical. So like, I've talked to churches where they're like, it just feels like so far out, like we haven't even thought about a sabbatical.
Yeah.
And so often the building block is, well, why don't you build in a study leave for a couple of years and see how that goes, and then consider the sabbatical after that.
Yeah, that's wise. That's wise. That's another aspect, another thing that is often forgotten. You should give more attention to that at presbytery yeah. level to see if put that in the, get more calls that include at least a week of study leave if possible. It'd be good.
But that's, you know, that's the dance between the presbytery and the local church, right?
Right.
So the local church is approving the call, but the presbytery really has a role that they can play in, like, here are some basic expectations we have as you're forming a call.
Exactly.
Is there a retirement component to it? Is there a study leave in it? Have you thought about this? Have you thought about that? Because at the end of the day, it's not always just a final number of right. salary. It's like, what else is in that call for vacation, study mm-hmm. leave, and so forth.
Absolutely. So, John, what else do you have going on? What would be your call to action, either for ministers and their families or for members of local churches? Of course, we have the website opccmc.org. But if there's one thing you'd like people to focus on, what would it be? The sabbatical program?
Can I do a variety?
Yeah. Fire
All
away.
Right. If I could say, here's a short list of things to consider. One would be to review the compensation tool if you're an elder or pastor. One would be to look at the sabbatical. One would be to mention our financial planning services. We have a voluntary financial planning team that can help pastors. And we're looking at providing other kinds of financial services than just what they're doing for retirement. Another piece would be insurance, which we didn't talk much about.
Oh yeah.
But
wow, man, that's a mess.
Review what your health insurance is and whatever kind of plan it is, if it's a medical sharing plan or otherwise, determine if you have an out-of-pocket max. So if there's a catastrophic event like hospitalization,
yeah, you might. You might
somehow that's being covered, and you're not on the hook for
right.
a major expense.
Right.
So that's a longer list that wasn't just like bring it down to one thing. Maybe if I said one thing, it would be visit our website.
There you go.
Take a tour around, or give me a call. Contact me, and I'd be happy to talk through whatever we've been talking about further.
And all the information, you can find it at opccmc.org. We'll have links to all that in the episode description. And it's exciting times. I mean, we're only 4.5 years into this, maybe not even coming on 4 years with this committee. But I'm delighted to see how it's progressed, and thankful for your leadership and picking up in many ways where our brother, dear brother, David Haney had began yeah. things. So blessings upon you in the Lord. We'll continue to pray for that and ask that the Lord would provide and continue to give you wisdom and insight and a lot of other ways that people can get involved. And you can find out all that out at the website. So thanks so much for taking the time today, John.
Happy to do so. Thanks for having me on.
Anytime. We'll come back soon. We'll give a report. I want to. Do we get like a commission on sabbatical?
We should.
We're gonna a sabbatical affiliate program. Please use our code. It's like every podcast has, you know, make sure you use the coupon code such and such of this affiliate marketing stuff. So we'll talk to you offline about that. We'll get that straightened out. Okay. Well, head on over, of course, to our website, reformedforum.org. And there you'll find information about all the stuff we're doing, other programs, publications, courses, a lot of exciting things, especially on the front of foreign missions. So we've been working hard with dear brother Douglas Clausen and some of the mission fields the OPC is involved in, as well as some other organizations. One, for example, ITEM, the International Theological Education Ministry. A lot of good brothers in the continental side are involved there, but check them out, ITEM.org, if memory serves me. And we're looking at ways that we can continue to provide and encourage people in other countries with Reformed theological resources. If you have any thoughts or ideas on that front, and if you'd like to see any of our courses translated into a specific language that we don't have available yet, contact us as well, mail@reformedforum.org. We'd like to help. We do want to thank everybody for listening and watching. We hope you join us again next time on Christ the Center.